playing him, I've been playing him. I know I'm no girl, and I'm singing my donkey song. The donkey falling, the donkey quarreling. The donkey say that he can't take too much load. The donkey shaking, the donkey breaking. The donkey want to shake his tail on the road. Watch my donkey.
CKUW 95.9 FM for Dialogue, Gravel Roads to City Lights, every second Friday at 8 a.m. I'm your co-host, Kaylin Spain, and we facilitate conversations bridging rural and urban Manitoba on hot topics.
And I'm Marianne Sorelli, the other co-host. Our initial idea was to facilitate dialogue on the radio between people who disagree, to model having a civil conversation about a difficult topic. The reality is, people don't want to come on the radio and disagree, but we're working on it.
In the meantime, we have interesting guests with interesting things to say on issues important to you as Manitobans.
You belong.
Good morning, CKUW listeners. It's Marianne Sorelli here with Dialogues, Gravel Roads to City Lights. And we're getting set up for another show today, this beautiful Friday morning in Winnipeg. Today, we're going to be continuing the conversation about food cost inflation and how everyone is coping and what some of the strategies are that people are going to be working with. And I'm going to get Kaylin on here, and we're going to have a bit of a different show this morning because we don't have any guests. We have met with lots of people, though, so we're going to be talking about all the different folks that we've talked to, both in rural Manitoba and in urban Manitoba here in Winnipeg. This show, Gravel Roads to City Lights, really tries to have a dialogue between people in rural and urban Manitoba. And when we're talking about food, of course, we're going to be talking to people that work in agriculture in rural Manitoba. We're going to be talking to folks, or we have talked to folks who work in direct farm and with Fireweed Co-op. And I've talked to folks that are from Harvest Manitoba, the food bank that is now serving all of Manitoba. And let's get to, first of all, a bit of a song that Kaylin has chosen by Corb Lund.
Name of the song.
And the song is Getting Down the Mountain.
everything stops, nothing left in the fountain. Nobody wants paper money, son, so you just will stop counting. Can you break the horse? Can you light the fire? What's that? I beg your pardon. You best start thinking where your food comes from, and I hope you tend a good garden. Getting down on the mountain, getting down on the mountain. Don't want to be around when the ship goes down. I'll be getting down on the mountain. If the truck don't run, the bread don't come. Have a hard time finding petrol. Water ain't running in the city no more. Do you hold any precious metal? Can you gut the fish? Can you read the sky? What's that about overcrowding? You ever seen a man whose kids ain't ate for 17 days and counting? Getting down on the mountain, getting down on the mountain. Don't wanna be around when the shit goes down. I'll be getting down on the mountain. There ain't no heat and the power's gone out. It's kerosene lamps and candles. The roads are blocked, it's all gridlocked. You got a shortwave handle. Can you track the deer? Can you dig the well? I couldn't quite hear your answer. I think I see a rip in the social fabric. Brother, can you spare some ammo? Getting down on the mountain, getting down on the mountain. Don't wanna be around when the shit goes down. I'll be going to ground on the mountain. When the oil stops, everything stops, nothing left in the fountain. Nobody wants paper money, son, so you just will stop counting. Can you break the horse? Can you light the fire? What's that? I beg your pardon. I think I see a rip in the social fabric. Brother, can you pass the ammo? Getting down on the mountain, getting down on the mountain. Don't wanna be around when the shit goes down. I'll be getting down on the mountain. Getting down.
CKUW listeners, you are listening to Dialogues, Gravel Roads to City Lights, Friday, June 5th. The time is 8:08, and my name's Kaylin Spain. I am a co-host here with Marianne Sarielli. Good morning, Marianne.
Good morning, Kaylin.
How are you doing today?
Oh, I'm great. It's a glorious day outside.
Is it sunny in Winnipeg?
It's beautiful.
We had rain up here in Arbourg. So much rain, my garden was so happy.
Ah.
Yeah.
Everything's finally green here.
Yeah, the grass is growing, and the farmers are happy up here, too, because it's been a bit of a race to get all of the seed in the ground, which probably isn't really all in the ground. I'm thinking if you're listening and you're a gardener, maybe you're thinking, oh, I wish I had got a little bit more planted, but it's still early June. There's still time. Yeah, today is a bit of a part two from our food security conversation that we had with some guests at our last show on May 22nd. So I will walk us through a little bit about what that show was about. And feel free to just jump in, Marianne, if you have other things to add. I have a bit of a recap here. and I think it's really important that we decided, Marianne, that we would kind of continue that conversation and keep talking about solutions, because, you know, last time we just kind of ran out of time, right? We were talking, getting so much into food security in Canada. What are some of the issues? We are all aware of some of those things, and we heard from our guests. We had Fred Tate from NFU, and James was a policy analyst for NFU, National Farmers Union. And we also had Bea Brusk, who is the president of Canadian Labour Congress. So those two folks were talking about basically how what we're seeing in grocery stores is food prices are going up. And so we're trying to get to the bottom of where does that food money actually go? And so, you know, Fred and James were bringing the farmer perspective, how this is impacting farmers. But then also we had Bea talking about how, you know, people along that work along the food chain, you know, how they're actually impacted by inflation and whether they're actually getting, you know, that food dollar. So I thought it was really interesting that Fred, who is like been working in food policy for many, many years, he farms west of Winnipeg. He talked about follow the money. And I just love that he was kind of looking at a big picture perspective on who is like agriculture working for and who it's working against. So he talked about agriculture is growing. I know this firsthand. I work with farmers and I live on a farm that farms are getting bigger. So Fred talked about how farmers have been pressured to get bigger, but the profit margins are only getting smaller, which is actually kind of the opposite if you look at any other business. Or like I think, for example, he used, grocery stores, essentially, where the profit margins just keep getting bigger. And for farmers, the margins, which essentially is the money that you actually make, is just getting smaller.
Right.
And it was interesting that James jumped in with that report around, NFU has been tracking farm income for years, Marianne, right? And
yes.
Just looking at how much money farmers are actually making, I think in some years it's been negative overall. So
yeah, and to look at what Fred was talking about, you know, because a lot of us in urban Manitoba here in Winnipeg, you know, our focus is often on the grocery store conglomerates, the large, you know, multinational corporations that run grocery stores. And what Fred was talking about was the corporations that run agriculture. So there's this whole other set of monopolies and conglomeration. There are these giant companies that we in urban Manitoba often don't really think about when we're thinking about where the money is going in terms of our food dollar that we're spending.
Mm-hmm.
So to look at the control that they have, you know, Fred also talked about the impact on farmers not being able to keep seed and having to be basically like serving these large agricultural corporations. And they're almost like sharecroppers again, where they're working for these large corporations. And that's where the money is going to in agriculture. So just like, it, you know, we always hear about the superstore, Galen Wesson, that's his name.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's not even the head of it anymore, of Loblaws and that whole chain.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't hear as much, I think, about the companies that are making money off the farmers and off the production of the food.
Yeah. And it's actually, well, another issue that NFU is working on is called the right to repair. So my partner is a mechanic, loves being a mechanic, has worked with his dad for many years. They fix really old machinery together and they keep it going. I mean, a lot of farmers that are small to medium farmers, you know, they like to fix their own machinery, right? And what's happening is the big companies see this and say, well, nah, actually, you're going to come to us. So if you buy a, you know, at some point, the farmer's going to have to buy a combine or a tractor or something, and the company, what the company does is doesn't let that farmer basically repair their own machinery that they bought. So it's basically tied to back to the profits of the company, where it's just wild. I mean, it's just kind of crazy, and it's like you said, it's happening with seed, it's happening with fertilizer, and I think it's that dependency that Fred was talking about, right, where farmers are getting squeezed to be more productive than ever, but really are actually more economically insecure than ever before.
Yeah.
It's pretty wild. So, yeah, I'm going to talk a little bit about what Bea talked about as well, is just like these public service workers who are, you know, working along the food chain. So she talked about people like food inspectors, people that are working in food manufacturing. And those folks are affected as well, right? Just because food prices are going up doesn't mean that they necessarily are getting fair wages. That was super interesting. So, and transportation, I never even thought about that, Marianne, with the transportation of our food, all those people along the food system line, like just not being able to bargain. She was talking about them not being able to basically form a union. They were shut down, I guess. I don't know. Do you know more about that? But that was, I was like, when we talked with them, I was like, I did not even realize that that, didn't think about that.
Well, I think that's what we're trying to do with this show is to help people get a bit of a more bird's eye view on that supply chain. So because I grew up, you know, the kid of a labor organizer who represented transportation workers.
Mm.
And I remember as a kid when the crow rate was removed, which was a subsidy on rail to help farmers move their products, their grain. And that happened under a Liberal government many years, I think it was, I don't know, in the 70s, early 80s. It's probably in the 70s. And you know, to look at the that supply chain with how we're transporting food and the impact of the on the cost, but also on carbon emissions from how we transport food.
Mm.
And, you know, we know that we're getting food from all over the world. And, you know, we're getting those strawberries in January. We're getting food from all over the world that costs to transport. And how the costs, again, those are big transportation companies that have, you know, thousands, millions of workers all over the world, I would say. And how are they being compensated? So what really struck me from the conversation with Bea Brusk from Labor was we have to really be careful that the strategies that we're coming up with for one part of the food supply chain aren't being born and adversely affecting the incomes from people in other parts of the food supply chain.
Yeah.
So we're going to get talking in a minute about things like direct farm and community share agriculture, which are taking people directly to the farmer and are not having to go to grocery stores, which means that they're, the jobs for people who are working in grocery stores could be affected. So how, and this is, you know, what prompted a lot of the organizing when we go back, you know, when the NDP was formed, it was this alliance between farmers and labor because there was a recognition that they have to work together to address the supply chain and these systems issues. And it's almost like we're going back to that time when we need to bring together the people working in all these different sectors and parts of the food supply chain and the food system in order to come up with some good solutions to the this beast of inflation that keeps
wild. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I just like, it's just so frustrating. Like just how, you know, like it's, I think in what James from NFU, he's the policy analyst, was talking about in that interview we did was just like how the food price inflation in 2023, he referred to this, you know, the House, I think, well, it was a submission that NFU made to the House of Commons, but just at that time when companies were raising prices and blaming it on the farmers, essentially. For me, that hits home. I'm just like, are you kidding me? Like, the farmer is the last person to blame or to, like, they're the what's called a price taker. They don't get to set their price. They just have to, you know, they don't get to pass along, you know, all of their costs. And so it's just so crazy to me how, you know, companies are just like kind of putting it, well, you know, yeah, it's putting up blaming the farmer. And it's like, really, no, like, let's look at the big picture here. So you can hear it in my voice, the frustration. So,
yeah.
And it's important that I think another thing I wanted to highlight, Marianne, was like, I love that James said that the common enemy is like is the companies. Like, so consumers and farmers are actually facing the same issue together, and they have this unifying issue, he called it. And it was just, I really love that, because we can all be frustrated about this because we're all eaters. And yeah, I really just like the way that he framed that. Mm-hmm. And so it gets me kind of excited about, you know, what can we do to empower consumers to understand where their food is coming from, just to learn, you know. And sometimes it's overwhelming. There's been some documentaries out there. If people like movies, they like to maybe learn that way instead of reading a report. But, you know,
yeah. I think it's really important to talk about what empowers workers and consumers and farmers and people that are really struggling with the cost of food. And one of the other things that came out of that National Farmers Union report that you're referencing that James worked on was the benefit of marketing boards and the commodities that have single desk selling and marketing, where the farmers sell to a marketing board that then that's who is finding where to actually market the produce, that those commodities have not seen the higher inflation. They haven't
right.
seen as much increase in the price of food.
Mm-hmm.
So that really speaks to a public policy that, you know, we lost the wheat board, and we've also had a lot of other pressure on marketing boards, but they're actually one of the ways that consumers can learn about of how they're a benefit not only to farmers but also to consumers. So that was a real hopeful thing and a positive thing that governments can look at.
Yeah, it's interesting because, like, the farmers that I know, which, like, many are first generation farmers, small scale, diversified. They might have like chickens and vegetables, and, you know, beef, pork. Like, they might have, as you know, like, we refer to them as commodities, but it's like, a lot of the farmers that I know that are like, yeah, they started a farm maybe 10 years ago and they're rocking it, and they're maybe direct marketing, but then they don't have access, right, to that sort of marketing board level. I mean,
that's a good point,
scale, which I'm going to talk about later, but it's just all related to scale and sort of how, you know, the bigger players are the ones that benefit. But yeah, but I think there's actually a report, Marianne, that NFU wrote that's called, it was a while ago, man, I can't remember when that was, but it was like marketing board kind of like 2.0. And so NFU has done like some really interesting kind of research or like envisioning around like what would it look like for like marketing boards to actually like work for all farmers.
That's a really good point that, you know, the smaller farmers that what's the word for that? They have this diversified farming that they're, I don't know what the scale is that you have to be to access the marketing boards so that it actually is a benefit to the farmer and they have access to that. But
yeah,
you know, we're trying to do with this show really is to start looking at food cost inflations from that system lens, really looking at the supply chains. And I went to a public health association workshop quite a few summers ago. It was the Summer Learning Institute, and it was on systems change, and they had this map of the food supply system that looked like a spider web, that looked like it was very complex, and there's all of these different players, and that is what we're trying to address, is understand what those drivers are and look at some of the new things that are coming up that are maybe even added to that food supply chain. So things like surveillance pricing, which is brand new approach by food corporations to use the data that we have on from our credit cards and from what we purchase, that they can actually monitor what we're buying and know, based on that data, the maximum price that they can charge. And it's called sometimes differential pricing because it will be different at different times of the day when people from different income groups are shopping. So being able to have a different price for people that have more money and would be able to pay more for that item. So this is using AI and digital tech in order to surveil our data and then use that to charge the maximum price. So governments, including in Manitoba, have been talking about addressing that and prohibiting that from happening. But the other thing that we've really seen an increase in is food theft. So people are low income or just, you know, they're struggling. And there's also a talk that this has actually become an organized crime, that there is theft that is then being resold. But the cost of theft to the supply chain. So we all know when we go to the grocery store now, there are often security guards, they're police, and the cost of that is being added to the cost of our food.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about how that's being dealt with. And then the other new thing is people are shopping more online and getting more food delivery. So that happened kind of increased through under COVID. But it's continued where people are then not maybe thinking about how much is that also affecting the price of food. And of course, there's the cost of fuel, which is, you know, influenced by the climate crisis as well as wars, which is affecting not only fuel, but also fertilizer. And once we start looking at these different parts of the supply chain and we take that system lens, we can think about the strategies that can be used to address those drivers that are driving up the cost of food in all sorts of different areas. And, you know, look at how we can develop solutions at different levels. So, you know, we can do things that might directly affect consumers and eaters, you know, those of us that eat food at the individual level, but we can also do things at the community level, like community share agriculture, and as well as community gardens. And then we can also do things more at the systems level, the policy level, things like that single desk marketing that we were just talking about. So that, you know, frames up a little bit about how to maybe approach this in a way that is systematic and looking at those different parts of the system.
Yeah, it definitely can be overwhelming at times. You know, kind of like you're saying, that the climate change crisis is, like, can just be so overwhelming. And I think sometimes people just want to know, well, what can I do? And so, yeah, so second half, we're at 8:30. Now we can switch to what can you do? I want to talk a little bit about some of the ways that people can get engaged with local food. And I think later on you're going to be talking a little bit about Harvest Manitoba in your conversation with them, Marianne. So, but I sit on the board for Direct Farm Manitoba. It's a cooperative of farmers and farmers markets across Manitoba. So, very passionate about the organization. I've known a lot of the people that sit on the board. We've known each other. We're a community, really. But what's really cool is that we're seeing more and more farms that are starting and joining the organization. So I was just looking at our numbers this week, and just in 2026, there was over 20 new members that joined. So farmers and actually like farm-based food businesses. So farmers are, you know, some farmers are not just producing, you know, vegetables or meat, they're actually like producing food products that are sort of what we call value added. So it's like, you know, they're doing like pickles or things that you might see at the farmers market that would be coming from a farm, but maybe having, I mean, there's some really cool products out there. If you go to St. Norbert Farmers Market on a Saturday, it's like you just see, whoa, like there's so many new products that are kind of coming out and really exciting. And there has been some support. The regulations to actually create a food product in Manitoba are very challenging to navigate and still a barrier for many farms. But I will say that it's been Direct Farm Manitoba has done a really good job of like bringing to attention to, you know, to the province to say, look, like people are wanting to start, you know, these businesses are wanting to maybe develop a new food product. And so how can we do that? And having conversations with the province around, okay, like, how can you support? Is this a food safety thing? Is this a farm regulation thing? So I don't need to get too much into it, but just want to, put a shout out to the organization.
You know, Kaylin, that's a really interesting thing that you just brought up that probably a lot of people don't think about. You know, you've got a farmer, they're growing cucumbers, they could sell their cucumbers directly to a company, or they can go to a market and sell it directly to they can sell it to consumers, but they could also make pickles. So what are the regulations around making pickles so we are sure that people are going to be safe in eating these pickles that are coming from a small producer? They're not going to be having the same regulation if they're going to a company that's, you know, Bix or some of these big companies that are manufacturing millions of bottles of pickles.
Yeah.
So that's a really interesting place to look at where there could be some to address some of the challenges for having local production that is smaller scale and regulating that. You know, we've done it now for craft beer. We've got this huge new industry on local breweries.
Yeah.
Why can't we do it for some of these other, whether we're making pickled beets or other, you know, things that come from eggs or whatever other vegetables that are being produced?
Yeah, so basically, in short, I'll just summarize very short. In short, there's basically two branches in Manitoba that would be working with a farmer if they want to develop a new product or let's say bring something to market, because so there's Manitoba Agriculture, and then there's, you know, food safety. There's like Manitoba Health. So the issue is that government doesn't always talk to each other. And so what the members of Direct Farm Manitoba find is that it's really confusing to navigate the regulations because they're not always sure who to talk to. For different products, they're considered higher risk, so depending on the acidity of the food. So for example, like with canned products, then like some canned goods are considered like lower risk, right, than others. So like pickles are generally just like lower risk. But it's kind of these, I mean, it's kind of the hoop, right, that farmers or, you know, a farm-based business would need to sort of jump through in order to get that product. And the other crazy thing, Marianne, is that there's a huge difference between, you know, selling at the farmer's market and getting that product ready for a farmer's market and just like showing up there and then selling it directly to the consumer. So the province like views those things differently. And on that note, what's really, really exciting is that Direct Farm Manitoba has got farm eggs. It's advocated for years and years and years. I don't even know how long. I've been on the board for like four, but, you know, I think it's just as big celebration as that Direct Farm Manitoba got farm eggs at farmers markets, which is a huge deal because farm eggs are, you know, typically they're graded, right? When we see them in the grocery store, they have that little stamp on there. And they've been graded. And so, you know, a small farm doesn't have access to a grading station. So these are just kind of these hoops or jumps, right, that like a small farmer, the average farmer, if they're going to have a small flock of chickens, they're not going to invest in this big grading station, which is very expensive. So getting farm eggs at farmers markets, which like with, you know, with there's certain guidelines that have been created to, you know, for that the province to approve that. But it's really exciting. It's very exciting because really just trying to advocate for how can smaller producers really find those markets, right? And get the food, get the awesome food to people who really want it, because farm eggs always sell out almost. And they're really popular. So
yeah,
that's exciting.
It's interesting because, you know, one of the big solutions is relocalizing our economy, relocalizing our food supply chain. And, you know, there's been strategies for that are individual with consumers, like the 100-mile diet. But there can also be strategies through what you've just described, is being able to get locally produced eggs at your local market, or even at some stores that are going to be local stores that will be supplied by local farmers.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to make a big note of that, because that's another huge win for you guys, and that's great to celebrate.
Yeah, it is really exciting. And I think it's interesting, just like we don't need to get too much into this, but, you know, I think when we talk about like Manitoba made and like local, there, I guess like when you look at direct marketing and like the farmers that I know that are like direct marketing their products, like they just go so much further beyond the term of just local. Like they are just caring for their animals, caring for their land. Some of them are using the term regenerative. Some of them are using the terms like free range or organically grown. And I think it's something that's just like they just are going above and beyond just producing that food and just saying, well, it's local. It is not just local. And so anyways, I could talk about this forever. As you can tell, I'm very passionate about it. But I wanted to highlight, also really exciting, is that Farmers Market Week, look at your calendar, is July 20th to 26th. So if you're making some plans for the summer and you're doing like a staycation, you're hanging out in the city, which is awesome. We're going to talk about that in our next show. There's going to be some special activities and, you know, we'll probably get the premier out or something, get Bug Wob to come and, you know, speak at St. Norbert or something like that. I don't know. There'll be like a ton of fun activities that week just to highlight the importance of farmers markets in Manitoba. So another thing that's really cool, this is the last thing I want to talk about for Direct Farm, is that there is a local food currency program. So this is something that the province is supporting. And so thank you, province of Manitoba. For basically how it works is like it's increasing the accessibility of local food for folks that are low income. So there's 27 community partners that are distributing food vouchers, okay, across Winnipeg. And then those food vouchers can be used at farmers markets. So it's a bit of a new currency, if you will. And so there's 12 farmers markets where farmers are accepting that currency. And it's a voucher for basically a discount on local food. And I have the dollar figure here. It's like $318,000 redeemed in 2025. So that's a big impact on the local food economy and for the farmers of Direct Farm Manitoba. So really cool.
That is so great. You know, I'm also part of the Community Economic Development Network. You know, I taught community economic development at college, and we're planning this event every October called The Gathering. And that's a story, or that's a program that is in line with community economic development to have this food currency, this alternative partnership with the markets where people can use I don't know how you do it. So you can explain that a little bit more, if it's actually just a digital thing that they get on their phone, or is it, how does that work?
No,
but
I mean,
should promote
often,
that at
you know,
the gathering.
Yeah, it's actual vouchers. So they're distributed through the community partners. And so, I mean, it's like money really. And so, but it's redeemed directly from those farmers. And so, yeah, we've heard great things from the farmers too. And often what happens is like, once we have these community, partners developed, right, then farmers are willing to say, well, like, okay, like if, because that program is still, the dollar is still going directly back to the farmer, right? But that what we're often seeing is like our farmers, like direct farms, are just so generous too, and just going above and beyond and create, you know, giving extra donations essentially, just to kind of keep this program thriving and really impactful on, you know, there's tons of food deserts in Winnipeg, right?
Well, and there's also the challenge of people who are lower income of eating fresh food. Like the challenge with, you know, maybe this is a time that I can jump in and talk a little bit about what my conversation was with Harvest Manitoba, you know, the food bank that's now province-wide. Mm-hmm. They're feeding tens of thousands of people, like over 60,000 people weekly.
Wow.
And they, you know, they do advocacy, but they're also dealing with the fact that often the food at food banks is highly processed, starch, sugary food, that there's research that shows that it contributes to health impacts of eating those kind of foods, the diabetes, heart disease, all those other problems. So there's been an effort to have strategies to get fresh food to people that are lower income that are going to be, you know, buying food at the dollar stores or that kind of thing, mm-hmm. Which is, you know, has a long shelf life and is cheaper, but is not as healthy.
Yeah.
So this kind of a strategy, I think, is really important because it's not just addressing that you need to eat. You need to eat good food in order to be healthy. And I'm going to follow up on this issue, too, with how to compare the cost of quality fresh food from this voucher system that you've developed with if people are relying on, you know, your basic grocery store. And that would be a really interesting comparison to see the affordability factor of, because I know when I buy the food, and our farmers market just started yesterday, we went for the first time get our share, and the quality of the lettuce, the quality of the asparagus, it's just such delicious, you know, amazing quality of food.
Yeah.
So to have that also for people that are really struggling with low income so that they have access to that quality food is super important.
Well, and it kind of goes back to what we're saying about like unifying eaters and farmers and making that connection more directly, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, there's also one project that's run by the Fireweed Food Co-op. Is it called a Veggie Van? I guess they set up in different locations in low-income neighborhoods, and it's supported by donations to get that running so that the farmer is still getting the right dollar, the right food dollar. But then, you know, it's accessible to people. Like, it's a sliding scale, kind of pay what you can. So pretty cool.
Hmm.
Yeah.
You were going to talk a little bit more about some of the other things that Fireweed Food Hub is doing?
Yeah, so they have a farmer's market. There's an online local food buying system. If, you know, if you don't necessarily have the time to get to a farmer's market, then you can order online. So that's an online local food online ordering system. It's not like a click and collect, but yeah, so, you know, there's lots of farmers that are selling kind of through there. A cool thing is that the food hub is also selling wholesale. So trying to get local food into restaurants and kind of they're thinking maybe more so like, can they have a storefront in the future? They're kind of thinking about that right now. But I work for an organization called Young Agrarians. I love my job so much. I guess basically part of my job as a Manitoba manager is to advocate for new farmers. So all of this good work is being done by farmers in Manitoba, and we also need new farmers. And so I run an apprenticeship program, and so I got to go out to Russell and meet 12 new farmers. So they're like aspiring farmers. And holy moly, it was just so inspiring because they're just kind of a little naive, I guess. It reminds me of when I was excited about farming and a little bit like, okay, like I just want to go out to a farm. But part of my job too in the apprenticeship program with Young Agrarians is to also, you know, you know, help support someone who wants to farm and who is thinking about farming. And what's cool is that like, actually, the School of Agriculture at U of M really wants to be supporting their new entrants, we call them. So they're new farmers, you know, who really want to farm. But, you know, it's really hard navigating that. So part of the policy work that I do with Young Agrarians is also, like, advocating for, you know, how can we support farmers that want to get into farming and actually thrive in farming and, you know, what are some of those barriers and challenges, like the regulations that we were talking about before, you know, how can we, kind of like support those new farmers and make sure that they actually, you know, succeed. So I might be meeting with the Minister of Agriculture this month, so we'll see.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, that idea too, that how important it is to keep people in rural Manitoba, keep people working on the land, and to have young people do that, because that's a real issue with secession and farming. And, you know, we heard from Fred and the NFU about the fact that there's a big pressure to have this corporate size agriculture. So it's good to know that this program exists and you're doing that work, Kaylin.
part of it. It's a dream job, honestly.
Good for you.
Thanks. It's really good, and I think part of it is just also building some bridges a little bit, where, you know, recognizing that there are lots of groups. It's not just Direct Farm Manitoba, but there's lots of, you know, yeah, farmers in general, like, they don't need to be fighting with each other. They just need to be, like, working together on getting more people in rural communities and more people farming. So,
well, and I keep thinking about, you know, I know that you are also up looking at the issues in the north, where people in the north have been paying these outrageous food prices for a long time, and I can't imagine what it's like there now. So tell us a little bit about what you were learning about from Fox Lake, the Food for All project.
Yeah, I went to a conference and I met up with an amazing, ironically, I met up with her in Saskatchewan at this Indigenous agriculture conference. So there's this national agricultural food. It's basically like it's called the National Circle of Agriculture and Food. And so it's an Indigenous-led organization that is working, you know, across Canada, really, to kind of bridge together Indigenous projects that have to do with food. And it's just incredible to see the Indigenous leaders that are emerging and the youth. Holy moly, there was a panel. And it was just so amazing to hear what the youth are up to and, you know, these regenerative agriculture projects that are happening on First Nation communities. And so that was that. So I went to that conference and I met Vanessa Hines. She's been hired by her band in Fox Lake Cree Nation. And it's called the Food for All Project. So she's been working there, I think it was like full time for I don't know how many years, but trying out different projects basically. And I think a lot of communities are trying out that. I'm trying to get a sense. I mean, I don't know. I think there's an organization that does this work, which is Food Matters Manitoba. They do a lot of this work in youth engagement and in northern communities to kind of work on the ground with people and try to figure out what are their needs. Because it's not just a blanket solution, right? But what Vanessa's doing in her community of Fox Lake is you know, building up garden beds. They're getting a new, I was talking to her on the phone. She was like, yeah, we're getting a greenhouse. Like, she's just trying to do everything. She's just such a, like, driver. And it's just so incredible that she's being, like, paid to do that work and paid full time. It's an actual position. And it's just so important that she gets to work to do all that, to engage her community. So she actually is hiring the youth from her community too. So they get these. So she'll do the grant writing for the summer students and things like that, and then hire the youth directly from her community to help. And they did chickens, and they actually like butchered the chickens. And so even just like teaching, you know, these Indigenous youth like how to like butcher a chicken. And so she was like, yeah, she was doing that with them. And it's just like we all need to get back to the land, honestly. It's just, I could get into this. So I could talk forever about this, Marianne, but, you know, I just think it's really cool that there's just like different projects that are happening. And I think it's in Young Agarians, we talk about it as like food sovereignty, right? Mm-hmm. Like that people are able to, especially Indigenous populations, are able to take back control over their food because they've been on the land forever, right? And so it's just really incredible. What I saw at this conference was just like all these different projects that are happening, you know, on First Nation communities that are Indigenous led. And I think that's really important because that really is food sovereignty, right? We can't say, as settlers, we can't say what's right for them. So, but I was super inspired. It was really cool. I got a lot to learn still.
Well, and it's just great to hear that that community economic development is happening. You know, when communities in the north that can be very remote, when those First Nations can have their own food supply, farm, they still can do their hunting and they can do their gathering with all sorts of berries and wild rice and all the other things, but then also build their economy around housing. If those two things are happening, they can create very sustainable, you know, viable, strong communities. And that's what it's all about.
For sure.
Dealing with other, you know, infrastructure like their water supply, that would also become part of that. So having even greenhouses where they can grow year-round locally, that's huge.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's been done. You know, it's being done in other parts of the world that have freezing winters. Why can't we do it here?
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah. And really, like, I think what we learned from Leah, when we had Leah Gazan on the show, we were learning about, like, is this a provincial issue or is this, like, a federal issue? And just, like, holy moly, it's way more complicated than I thought it was, you know, around, like, how can we ensure that, you know, First Nations, you know, are able to be food sovereign, essentially, right?
Right.
And able to grow their own food. And it's, like, which is the way that they were living for years
right.
before. Like, it's nothing, this is nothing new, folks. Like, you know, we all know this, right? And, like, what does reconciliation actually look like is there's this, there's so many amazing things that are happening that are Indigenous-led, too, that, you know, land-back movements. And but we can be allies, too, as settlers. Like, we can we can keep learning about these things and keep, just, like, advocating for them and highlighting them and bringing them to life.
So there's a few other things that we wanted to bring up when I was talking about Harvest Manitoba and the work that they do. You know, they don't just supply food through the food banks. They do advocacy and they do research. So there was a new report by the Food Bank Canada. It was a report card on each province. And it actually gave Manitoba a positive. They went from a D minus to a C minus. And we talked about why that was. And it wasn't to do with food. It was actually to do with a subsidy for housing, which then freed up people to have more money in the meager amount that they get from something like social assistance or employment and income assistance benefits, that they could spend a bit more of that on food. To be a bit more food secure. But the, you know, Megan Urbis, who's the advocacy and stakeholder director, also talked about, you know, the people that are on minimum wage or working full time are also using their food bank services. And what we also talked about, one of the other positive impacts that affected the score in Manitoba was the Universal School Meal Program, which has, you know, been implemented by the provincial government. So there's recognition that there's been some positive impact from that. We talked a little bit, too, about one of the things that's a bee in my bonnet, to use that old rural farm term, but is the provincial government's cut to the PST on junk food and deli.
Yeah.
So they're marketing this as, you know, taking the food, the tax off groceries. But people need to know that there was no PST before this on the majority of groceries that we buy, like the real food, like vegetables and fruit and meat and dairy.
Yeah.
That this is just on deli, which has the biggest markup of any food in the grocery store. That's the trays that are cut up and, you know, put in those plastic containers that you buy for way too much money.
Yeah.
And then also things like the rotisserie chickens. But that's also on junk food, on Slurpees, which I say is not food, you know, that these are things that are actually going to drive up the rate of diabetes in Manitoba, which is already a problem. So again, we have to take that bigger picture view of the kind of policies that we're bringing in and see if it actually is a healthy policy for people that are struggling with food cost inflation, or if it's actually just going to contribute to people eating food that isn't good for them, and because they can't afford the food that is good for them. And, you know, we also have in Winnipeg, we have a food council that's an advisory body to the city of Winnipeg. So I wasn't able to talk with the staff that are part-time that work for the food council, but I was able to chat with some people that, someone that's a volunteer, and to find out that, you know, this is another organization that could be working on these issues locally in Winnipeg, that we need to have that attention, because in other cities, they're looking at another solution, which is in New York and Toronto, which is this idea of a public option on food. And I wanted to kind of address that a little bit. It's I relate it to public housing. It's like we do have housing that's owned by the provincial government and some that's owned by the city of Winnipeg.
Right.
That is subsidized housing, that it's available for people based on their rent is determined by their income. So we call that rent geared to income.
Okay.
And it's really been that portfolio has shrunk considerably since the 1990s. So, you know, public housing, when there's a sizable amount in the sector, actually can have an effect of pressure on the private housing market to keep the rents low. And yeah. The same thing could apply to a public option on food purchase. So if there's a grocery store that is got a relationship with farmers that's being able to supply low-income folks, kind of like what you're already doing with your voucher, mm-hmm. if that's supported by the provincial government or the federal government or a municipal government, that's what this public option on food would be like. And it would then help people who are struggling to pay for food at your regular grocery store. And it's something that's being done by the mayor of New York. It's something that's being developed in other cities in Canada, like Toronto. So this is something that the Food Council in Winnipeg could look at.
Yeah.
The other thing that I wanted to mention is there is also a number of groups that are looking at retail theft. And in talking with people in the labor movement that are part of those organizations, they're really only looking at how to address this from a policing point of view or a criminal justice point of view. And they're not looking at it from the fact that people are struggling to cope with the cost of food, and they're stealing food. And how do we deal with that? When one of the things that I learned is the people that are now the police that are now at the grocery stores, who are there on their overtime, the big grocery chains are paying them $1,200 a shift, and that's $150 an hour.
Oh my God!
And the people that are on social assistance are getting about $1,200 or less per month.
Oh, my God.
So when you look at where the money is going in addressing, you know, something like theft, it needs to actually go to the people that are struggling to feed themselves on social assistance and on a fixed income through their pension. And though particularly social assistance rates have been frozen, there hasn't been a substantive increase. It seems like, you know, there's still a whole movement to try and get a guaranteed annual income or some kind of benefit that would address the fact that welfare rates have just not anywhere near kept up with the cost of inflation. So we really have to look at what we're doing as a community and as a province when we're putting all this kind of money into these criminal justice approaches around food theft and not looking at the income of people that are really struggling. And that's one of the other things that I'm going to be following up on is trying to address that.
That's great. I feel like we're just going to keep going on this, maybe have more discussions in the fall about this. And as you said, Marianne, there's individual things that we can do at the individual level. You know, we can, you know, think about where our food dollar is going. We can go direct to farmers. We can also think about our community and think about community gardens. So there's many ways that you can, you know, build food security in your community. But yeah, next show we are doing June 19th. We are doing a show about summer travel. So we're going to dig into that. And then we're going to replay some of our shows in July and August, some of our favorite shows, so that Marianne and I could get a summer break. And then we'll be back in September with some fresh conversations. You're listening to Dialogue, Gravel Roads to City Lights. I'm Kaylin Spain with Marianne Sarielli, and thanks for joining us today. We hope you enjoy your day and the sun and the rain, and just have a wonderful day. Have a wonderful day, Marianne.
Same to you, Kaylin. Thanks so much for all your work.
Yeah, thank you. Have a great one.
Bye.
Okay, so for...